All right, so I got Dennis. How do you pronounce your last name?
Mouliar.
Mouliar. Yeah. Dennis Mouliar. Dennis, you're a you're an entrepreneur. You mm-hmm. own your own videography company, mm-hmm. and so talk a little bit about how that started. Like, how did the passion for creative and art and all that start for you?
Yeah, man. I mean, I come from like an immigrant home, and so like the arts are very much so appreciated. And so like my parents came from Ukraine in the early 90s. You know, me and my siblings were born here. But I think there was a huge emphasis on like playing piano and like drawing. And I don't know. It's just like one of those things I think they really wanted us to do. Yeah. And I think naturally I was just drawn more towards like photography and video. And I think like when I was a kid, our family would go on vacation and I'd be the one like filming. Technically, my dad started that, but eventually I started to like take that upon myself and like editing and stuff like that. So when I finished high school, I actually ended up going to film school. And then during film school, I really developed my like passion for it. And then during that time, I actually started my wedding company. And so people are just like, hey, can you shoot my wedding video? I'm like, yeah, sure. I don't know what I'm doing, but I'll figure it out. And so, yeah, when I was 17, I started my wedding company and been doing it for just 14 years now.
That's awesome.
Just travel the whole world, and it's been wild, bro.
That's amazing. That's the dream. That's the dream, right? Yeah. Like, find something that you're passionate about, and be able to monetize it, and then travel the world doing something that you love. That's what most people aim for.
You know what's funny though? Like, I feel like I kind of fell into the business part of it. I feel like for the first like 6, 7, maybe 8 years, I didn't even realize I had a business. I thought I was just like, I'm like doing this because I love it, and then people are giving me money. And then I think like really three-ish years ago, maybe I really started to take the business super serious in terms of like, and when I say, not that I wasn't taking it serious before, but I think I was starting to learn the business aspects of it,
right?
Of like, wait, what am I actually doing? It's kind of like I started backwards. Like, I didn't understand like, you know, all the technical terms and all the business stuff. I just kind of like, people were giving me money and I was just shooting. But it's been really cool in the last 3-4 years to actually like realize what I have in front of me and now intentionally like work on it and grow it, you know?
That's honestly, I think that's the best way to do it. I think so many people focus on the business side first with the mindset of just making money and not really finding something that they're passionate about. But you are able to find something that you're passionate about, pursue it, and then turn it into a business, which I think it makes a lot more sense. I think if more people went about it that way, there'd be a lot more people
happy
and fulfilled in what they do.
Yeah.
So you started the company at 17.
Yep.
It took off. And then where did that lead?
Yeah. So I was doing weddings, and then during the time of me shooting weddings, working with other videographers, I met a good friend of mine, Vitaly, who ended up being one of my main second shooters. So in a wedding, usually there's two shooters. There's a lead shooter, there's a second shooter. And pretty much what happened was me and Vitaly built a friendship. And it was around the time Vitaly started going to LA. And this was like when the influencer thing started. So he was a photographer and a videographer. But mainly he was like getting into photography. And the early days of like influencers in LA, like the Vine days, he was one of the first guys to be photographing like the George Jankos and the those early OGs.
Yeah.
And then we kept having conversations because I was in Portland. I'm from Portland originally. Uh-huh. And he's like, dude, why don't you come to LA? Why don't we like start filming fun content, like other than weddings, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was like, dude, I don't know, man. Like, I'm in Portland. I feel like I need to stay here. And over time, he kind of like convinced me. He's like, dude, you can run your business from anywhere. Mm-hmm. And so I remember it was like a snowy season in Portland. It was like night. I was driving with one of my friends. We were having a conversation about like, I felt like I was stuck in Portland. I was like, I don't know, man. I feel like I'm stuck here. I want to figure out what's next. And he's like, dude, why don't you move to LA? Like, why don't you go move with Vitaly and start shooting content? And it just clicked. I was like, you know what? What's holding me back? So literally a month later, I packed my car and I drove down to LA. Damn. And shortly after, Vitaly and I, we started shooting like little commercials, and eventually things started picking up, and eventually people started giving us a lot of money, and we're like, shoot, we don't have a bank account. Where are we going to put all this money?
Yeah.
And so that's kind of how we started our like production company in LA. And so, I mean, within like half a year to a year, we were making like high six figures, locking in contracts. Just, it was mind blowing, building a team, hiring people. Nothing I would have ever imagined.
Yeah. How old were you guys during all, when this all was going on?
I was like 24 and he was like 21. I think he just turned 21.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was wild. That's wild. And no clue what we're doing. Yeah. But you know,
but you're just having a blast and doing what you love.
Yeah. Yeah. Working a lot and
You
know, figuring it out.
That's awesome. And then where were you at spiritually during this whole, so 17, you start your business.
Yeah.
By the time you're 24, you're living in LA, you know, you've accomplished quite a lot. You're living the dream, right? Working with people that are, you know, people idolize, you know, where's your head at? Where's your heart at during this time, this period?
Yeah. So minute, like I got saved at 14. So ministry has been a huge part of my life ever since that moment.
Yeah.
That was 2007 when I got saved. And so from that point on, I feel like there was a lot of, like I got set from like pornography, right? Like literally the weekend I got saved, I got set free from porn and all this stuff that was really plaguing my mind. And so shortly after I, you know, I'm a musician and singer too. So I was like heavily involved in like worship in my church, leading worship for a while. So when I moved to LA, I actually was in a season of like, I was kind of, I think I was a little burnt out from the last season of ministry because I felt like there was a lot of, was giving a lot, but I wasn't receiving a lot for myself, and not in a selfish way. I just felt, I wish that there was more mentorship. And I think I was kind of, I don't know, the best way I could describe it, I was just kind of getting dried out on the inside. And so there was a season before I moved to LA where I actually started going to, I left my Slavic church and I started going to an American church, John Mark Comer's church, Bridgetown. Okay. So I sat under their teaching for about a year.
That's awesome.
And my life completely changed because there was this idea of like secular and a spiritual divide that I learned about of like that God doesn't only work within the church. He works outside the church. And it was during that time that I was moving to LA, I learned those concepts and they blew my mind because now I realized, wait, I could do film and I could still glorify God and this can still be my ministry, even though I'm like leading worship and stuff. And so when I left to LA, naturally, you know, finding community was hard. And like we went to a church in Hollywood and it was an amazing church, incredible church. But I think we were working so much that a lot of those old habits that the Lord set me free from, they started to drip back into my life. Yeah. And even though on the outside we were so successful and we looked successful, and I mean, we were successful. But you know, sometimes those people that look the most successful are the ones that are going through the toughest time. And I even remember like traveling the world with our team and working in these massive projects. And I was like, felt like I had darkness inside of me. And I just remember like, dang, like my dream is to have a family one day. My dream is to be husband and a father. And I started thinking like this life that I'm living is not conducive. Like the person I'm becoming right now is not the person I want to be. So like, what do I need to do? What do I need to change?
Yeah.
And I think spiritually what started happening was I think more and more and more I started to really, really hate what I was a part of in LA. And I think it was because I wasn't really passionate about the type of work we were doing. I don't think it was aligned with where God was trying to take me. And I think the breaking point, and this is like pretty intense, but there was a buildup to this point. But I remember sitting in our office one night. We had an office, we had employees, and it was late one night. It was just this dissatisfaction of like, I'm running two companies at this point, traveling constantly, never have time for community, don't have time for anything. You know, even when I visit my family in Portland, like, they're like, they don't even recognize me because I'm so on edge, like managing this project, man, and this, you know, managing this project. And this was the breaking point. I was sitting in our office one night and I had these thoughts. I was like, why don't you just drive your car off a bridge? And it was in that moment that I realized that something needed to change quickly because the enemy was attacking my mind and I was starting to contemplate. And I've never been like suicidal my whole life.
Did you know it was the enemy in that moment?
Did you
recognize that? You did?
I did, yeah. I did because I've walked with the Lord pretty much since I was 14. Yeah. So I could feel, like, I knew the demonic presence. And so I cried out to the Lord. And within a few months, my business partner Vitaly actually introduced me to a bunch of people from a church I go to called Ocean's Church in Irvine. And he's like, Dennis, I know you don't have time for anything or anybody, but in about 4 weeks, there's going to be a hangout. And at this point, I'm living in LA. It's like, in about 4 weeks, there's going to be a group hangout in Orange County. He's like, you're going to be there. So put it in your calendar right now because you're going to go. And I was like, fine, whatever. Okay, fine.
Vitaly told you this?
Vitaly told me okay, this. Okay. My boy, yeah. And so I ended up going, man. And it was wild because the people, like the young people that were there, they were from Oceans, and I think they were just starting the first year of the college that just started at Oceans at that point. Because Oceans was only like a few years old. And bro, just from like hanging out with them, my spirit started to get revived. And I started feeling like refreshed. And I was like, this is what I need. Like, I don't know what this is, but I need more of this. And so I started driving down from LA, visiting Oceans Church. And pretty much, not to get too ahead of myself here, but it was at one of the services that there was a advertisement for Oceans College.
Yeah.
And I knew at that point my schedule wouldn't allow me to do that.
Yeah.
But I knew I needed to do it. And so pretty much saw it. I was like, there's no way I'm ever going to do this program. It's a 9-month program. But inside I knew I needed to, and I knew I would. And so, excuse me. And so pretty much later that week, I met with my team. Went through a process. They ended up allowing me to take a sabbatical. So I was one of three partners. We had like a few employees. And so pretty much a few weeks later, I think, it was September of 2021, I started my first year of Oceans College, and my life completely changed. Like, from going, sitting in boardroom meetings with executives, now I'm like on my face crying every morning. At the church, like, just getting wrecked. So a complete switch of schedule.
Wow. What a difference in scenery, right? From this.
I mean, LA to like Orange County.
Yeah. Well, first of all, LA to Orange County, but then from like just the culture and the environment that you're around in LA.
Yeah.
You know, where it's all in the pursuit of self glorification and you know, material wealth and personal gratification to, you know, just a complete 180 of like surrender. Right. And, so you go to the college for 9 months, take a sabbatical, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then what?
So I take the sabbatical in September of 21, and then New Year's, right before New Year's, me and the partners, we met up to talk about what's next. Okay, Dennis, like you're in the middle, you just started the sabbatical. You know, we're stepping into 2022. Like, what's the plan? And it was funny because we all sat there and we just kind of, everybody kind of knew without saying it that, like, I wasn't going to be coming back. That, like, I was, it was time for me to, like, kind of go on my own path from the company.
Yeah.
And this is, at this point, this was like, I mean, starting in 17, so 18, 19, 20, 21. This was like 4 years in the making, almost 5 years in the making. And it was like everything that I thought, like, I thought this was going to be the thing that was going to support my family one day. Like, I thought this was gonna be the thing, you know. But like, there was peace about me not continuing. And so ended up figuring all that out, ended up exiting the company, and then I ended up finishing through my first year. And and I remember during my first year, there was a pastor that visited. His name is Jay Smith. A lot of people might know him. He's a mentor to a lot of pastors. And he talked about how he was talking to the students in the church, and he said, I would recommend you guys doing 2 years of this program. Mm. And he said, because on the first year, the Lord's going to be stripping you down, he's going to be doing surgery. And then the second year, he's going to be building you up and sewing you back up. And in that moment, I just knew I had to do 2 years because I knew I had a lot of stuff to go through.
Yeah.
And I knew like 1 year was just not going to be enough for me. Because there was a lot of stuff that the Lord was revealing in me, my character, you know. And so I went through the first year, ended up doing the second year. And then at the end of my second year, the funny thing about this is, like, our church is, like, just like developing the program. So it's like they at that point they didn't have a third year, yeah. but like they like added it on because it's like every year we'll add extra year, and I think they stopped at three for now, but yeah. but like they're developing as we go. Yeah. And anyways, I finished my second year, and I was traveling with family on the East Coast, and I thought I was done. Because at that point, I felt like I was already healthy. I was ready, that there was a lot of, I was excited for what's next. I mean, continue building my wedding company. You know, there's other dreams Lord gave me for like men's ministry. And he gave me this idea for this thing, this community called the Next High Society, which I'll talk about later that yeah. the Lord gave me when I was in New York. But I felt the Lord speak to me. He said, "You're not done yet with the college." Mm. I'm like,
after 2 years, right?
2 years. I'm like, yeah. Dude, I'm like 30, 31 at this point. Yeah. I'm like, people are like, dude, what are you doing? Like, you're in a Bible college. Like, you're yeah. in LA, successful, and now you're in a Bible. Like, what are you doing, you know?
Yeah.
Didn't make sense at all.
Right.
But I felt like the Lord told me, he said, year one and two is for you, but year three is for me. Mm. Like, will you obey me and do this third year for me?
Wow.
Like a complete obedience, you know? Yeah. No selfishness for me. Like, there's no ability for me to be selfish because I didn't want to be there.
Wow.
And so I remember meeting up with one of my pastors, and I was like, his name is Pastor Joel. I was like, "Pastor Joel, listen, this is where I'm at." He's the director of the college. And I'm like, "This is where I'm at. I don't know what to do. I'm like 99% sure I'm not going to do it, but can you convince me of the 1%? And he's so funny. He's like, "Dennis, I'm not going to convince you to do anything, but this is what the third year is going to look like." And I don't know, in that moment, I just knew I had to do it. Mm. And the crazy part is that third year, it's like I felt like everything unlocked for me. What God wanted to do in me, like, you know, there was this, you know, me stepping back into like worship ministry. It's something that I did for so long that it was on a shelf. Mm. But I think the Lord couldn't trust me until I obeyed him for that third year.
Wow.
And I was able to go back on the worship team, and for the first time in years, back using my gifts on the platform again, which for me at that point, I didn't even care because I was so surrendered to the Lord of like, "Lord, if I never go back on stage and sing and play my guitar, like I don't care. I'm okay here in the back on my knees." And when it happened, bro, it was so cool because I could care less. Now it's like, I could be on stage. I can be in the back. Like I don't care where I am.
It's crazy. A couple of things I wanted to go back to. So first thing is when you first decided to, took your 9 month sabbatical.
Yeah.
And in that point, I'm sure you were like, "I'll take a 9 month sabbatical, go to the college, and then I'll come back business as usual."
Yeah.
And then you decided not to go back. You decided, "Hey, I'm gonna let this go."
Yeah.
Go do the college for 2 years. And you said you felt peace about it. At any point during that decision in the 2 years,
yeah,
did you feel anything other than that peace? Did fear ever, you know, come into the picture, anxiety, worry? Because, I mean, I don't know about you, but for me, that's something that I can imagine myself kind of freaking out, you know, like, what did I just do right now? You know what I mean? What was that like for you?
Yeah. I mean, I would say there was this sense of unknown and a fear with the unknown.
Yeah.
I was confident about my decision for sure.
Yeah.
Because I knew that, like, I did the right thing. There was just a peace all around that. And there's a really cool end to this story too that I'll share about even me going to the college, because there was other people that ended up going from our company. Pretty much most of our company ended up going through that college because they were like, "Dude, Dennis is like not the same anymore."
Wow.
And so there was fear, because there was like a fear with a sense of the unknown, because I'd spent all these years putting my blood, sweat, and tears into this brand and these relationships and all this stuff. But I also knew at the same time that the Lord was going to redeem those years, that he was going to give me, he's going to expedite me, but he's also going to give me favor when it's time for me to go back. I just felt that. And I would get like prophetic words about it. So it's not like the Lord just like dropped me there.
Yeah.
Like he would keep reminding me. He's like, "Hey, I got you."
Yeah.
The plans I have for you are insane. Yeah. Like just keep staying obedient, keep staying humble, keep staying under, submitted to leadership. I think that was the biggest thing that I learned, is like being submitted under my pastors. If they say no, if I'm like, "Hey, what do you think about this?" They say no. All right. I'm not going to argue. I'm not going to like fight this
Yeah.
because I trust that God is speaking to them. And that probably was the biggest thing, is like that idea of me getting broken with my will. And I think that's what unlocked everything, honestly.
Man, that's awesome. I went through a similar process, but not through the college, of, you know, finally submitting. God told me actually at the end of last year that my breakthrough is coming through. My breakthrough was waiting for me on the other side of getting rooted in church. And so I was always been the kind of guy that went to church on Sundays and then just left, never got involved, never committed. I went to this church for a while, that church for a while, and God was like, your breakthrough is waiting for you on the other side of your being rooted in my house. Wow. And so I finally just surrendered, and I was like, okay. So I got plugged in, joined small groups, joined men groups.
Yeah.
And it's crazy, man. Just being under the protection, the prayer of a house of God, of church, of leadership, submitting myself to leadership. And it's only been what, like 6 months or so. And I can already see the difference in the breakthrough in my spirit, and just having a community that's praying for you, having people that are speaking into your life. Like, you were still a believer when you were out in LA doing your thing, but the environment that you were in wasn't feeding your spirit.
Yeah, that's exactly it, man.
Yeah, your spirit was starved. Even though, you know, you're saved, you're born again, your spirit was starved because you're feeding the flesh. And man, it's so hard for people to wrap their mind around like that concept. Yeah. You know, there's we live in a culture that promotes, you know, self-made, you know.
Yeah.
I did it myself. And I think God is really looking for people that will trust him enough to let go, and let go enough to let him show them the way that he wants to do it.
Yeah.
And it's so contrary to the world's way. Like, I just think of, I think of how God showed, his power through his people in the Old Testament. Like, even when he was giving them the promised land and Joshua in Jericho, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't, you know, take your armies and storm the building, and it was walk around for 6 days, and on the seventh day, I want you guys to shout and praise, and the walls of Jericho came crashing in.
Yeah.
But it's hard. Why do you think it's so hard for people to trust God and do it that way?
That's the question. I think we're just so used to living our way. Like, we're so calculated. Like, we think that, you know, tomorrow I'm going to go through my routine and I'm going to do this and, you know, and then I'm going to go here and I'm going to go do that. I just think we've spent so much time practicing to trust ourselves that when it comes to trusting God, we have no concept for that at all.
Right.
I don't know. I think we live in just a me world.
Yeah. I think it's community, like the environment that we're in.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so important to be surrounded in a community and an environment of people that trust God.
Yeah.
Have seen God's hand move, being surrounded by, you know, the word of their testimonies. It sparks faith in us in a different type of way when we're around other people who are trusting God with that same type of surrender.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm going through a season of transition right now too, and it's tough. It's tough. Like, I'm leaving an industry that I've been in for 7 years, and it's guaranteed income right now. Walking away from that, trusting God and obedience.
I feel you, bro.
And it's been same thing as you, actually, which is crazy. Like, peace, that doesn't really make any sense, right?
Wow.
Everyone that I tell them what I'm doing thinks I'm crazy. Yeah. Like, you're walking away from multiple six-figure income.
Yeah.
Why? Like, I feel like this is what God's calling me to do.
Crazy,
you know?
It's crazy, right?
but what I'm realizing is, it's hard to trust somebody that you don't know.
Oh, that's good.
And it's hard to get to know somebody that you don't spend time with. And when we think that it's all up to us to make the future happen, to make our goals happen, then we don't slow down enough to spend time with God, to be in his presence, to know him, and to prioritize that and to value that. And that's when the voice of the enemy becomes louder than the voice of God. And that's when the culture of the world becomes predominant over the culture of the kingdom.
Yeah.
And I think if we just slowed down enough to be in God's presence, to know him enough to trust him, we'd be able to let go a little bit easier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was this, while you were talking, there was this, I remember John Mark said this one thing. He said, in the Hebrew culture, and John Mark, what I love about him is he emphasizes so much on like Sabbath.
Yeah.
His book, The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. So highly good. Recommend everyone to go read it.
Me too, man.
It's like for this world, it's so good for the time we live in. But he talks about this idea that like in the Hebrew culture, there's no like word for spiritual life, right? And so sometimes people ask like in America, they're like, so how's your spiritual life doing, bro? And in the Hebrew culture, there's no word for spiritual life. And so like if you ask Jesus like, how's your spiritual life doing? He would be confused because the Hebrews believe everything's spiritual.
It's just life.
Everything, it's just life.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think if we had that perspective to like our daily life, that like what I'm doing right now is spiritual. Like this is spiritual. Like gym, spiritual. Mm-hmm. My job is spiritual. God is in all of it. He's not waiting for you at church. Like he's there with you, you know?
Right.
And I think if we live through the lens of that, I think our lives would look a little bit different. Well, a lot different.
Definitely, definitely. That was I read a couple of his books too, and that was something that I had grown up. I grew up in a Christian house too, but it was very legalistic. So it was very much
same.
When you go to church, you know, you're on your P's and Q's, you're dressed up to the nines.
Yep.
And,
yep.
But you know, it was all about pleasing God through our actions and performance. And so I always saw God as this like distant, judgmental, critical God that was just waiting for me to slip up so he could punish me, you know? And so I never saw him as a father. I never saw him as loving. And so it's hard to trust somebody that was like, that seemed so bipolar. You know what I mean?
Cause flip it's on scary. It. You
it
don't
was,
know.
It was, yeah, it was super scary.
Wow.
Yeah. But yeah, man, it's a journey, man. It's such a journey getting like, and what you said before about not being discipled or not being mentored.
Yeah.
I think that's like a lot of times we focus on getting people saved and it's like, all right, congratulations, you're saved. go out to the world. But what now, you know?
Yeah.
Like being discipled, submitting yourself onto leadership is critical for spiritual growth and development. Without it, we get eaten alive. Like the enemy is just is on us. The world is on us.
Yeah.
What was the impact of that for you in your life? Because you did life spiritual or Christian life with it and without.
Yeah, with discipleship.
Yeah.
Bro, it's everything.
Yeah.
It's everything, man. I mean, I think every person should be discipled, and every person should be discipling somebody.
Yeah.
Because you should be pouring out what someone's pouring into you. And I think that's the circle of life right there. You get poured into and you pour into someone else. And if you keep doing that, you're going to find yourself feeling like your soul is coming alive. Mm. You're going to feel fulfilled for some reason. You're not going to know why. No one's paying you to do it, but it's the best feeling ever. When you could sit down with someone that can't do anything for you, all they're willing to do is they're willing to sit there and listen to every word that you say.
Yeah.
So I think for me, one thing that I realized, and right now, I think like, I mean, recently, David, my buddy, and I started our small group, which you came to last week or 2 weeks ago. And that is something I've wanted to do for a while because I feel like I need it as much as, like, I need it as much as, like, the guys that come need it. Because like we all need to grow and sharpen each other. And so, for me, it's been a game changer because it has allowed me to think outside of myself. And I think there's a saying, I don't remember exactly how it goes, but it's like, if the teacher, I can't remember how it goes, but it's like sometimes the teacher gets more benefit than the student when they're teaching.
Yeah, dude.
So I think I love the idea of discipleship because it grows you, stretches you. And then for me, I love to like sit and ask someone like, how did you get there? How did you do that? Can you teach me this? It's like coming from a place of like humbleness, like, hey, I want to learn what you learn. I'm not going to put any of my opinion in it. I just want to like submit, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's an extra layer of accountability. You know, when you're discipling somebody, you know that they're watching your every move.
Yeah.
You want to make sure you don't lead them in the wrong way or set the wrong example. So it's like an extra.
It really is, man.
Extra level.
It keeps you on the straight and narrow.
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. So I want to talk a little bit about like mindset.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that when it comes to like Christian circles, we focus a lot on like the spiritual, right? Which John Mark Comer would correct us, but
I know, right?
But we focus a lot on the spiritual. But like we're talking about, there's no separation between spiritual and secular. It's just it's all spiritual. But when it comes to mindset, there's a lot of people talking about, there's like Gary Vee and there's all these guys that are talking about like mindset and success and even masculinity. But how do we apply that? And how did you apply that in your life and in faith and in your business? Because it takes a certain level of mindset. It takes a certain level of mental fortitude to be able to grow a successful business, to be able to stick through the hard times, the tough times. What was that mindset that kept you pushing when times were hard? And how do you relate that to your walk with God?
So good, man. That's such a big question. I'll try to answer it as best as I can.
Yeah.
So I have to say, like, a lot of my, I guess, a lot of my grit, or maybe a lot of, like, my mindset, it came from, like, my parents. The fact that they immigrated from another country. I mean, think about, like, they left everything to come to a new country. They did not know the language, and they had to start a new life. And I just knew, growing up, seeing how hard they worked, and I always knew, like, I don't want anyone, like, I want to be the one providing for my family too one day, the same way they did for me. And I want to provide for them too. And I want to like buy them anything they want, you know, when the time comes, to be able to be that successful, to like just take care of the family, you know? Yeah. So I have to like attribute like the hard work to like a part of it to that for sure. Because there's something with that mentality that like pushes you.
For sure.
Like, you don't expect anyone to give you anything. You're just like, I'm going to make this happen because my parents did, you know?
Yeah.
I think another part of that, I think I had a lot of bad examples in my life. And I think I learned a lot from that too, of seeing like, I don't want to be like that guy. I never want to be like that guy. Right.
Yeah.
And there was a fire that lit up inside of me that made me just hungry to learn, hungry for information. Like, even when I was in film school, I remember, usually there's like group projects and you have to like help other people and stuff. And I was so focused on my projects. I don't know, maybe this is mean of me, but like, I was never a part of anyone else's projects. I was doing my own projects and I was inviting people, hey, come help me in my project, you know? And I was just like, I was building, I was digging. And I was like figuring out like what I'm doing, my craft, my skill. And I think what happened after film school was when I graduated, there was a lot of people that, and this is not just with film school, this is with any school, but a lot of people think like, oh man, like this school is just going to give me a job. And they were like upset that the school didn't give them a job or like didn't connect them with a career or whatever.
Yeah.
But when I left, I started my company and I wasn't like super successful, but like I had something that I was working on that would build my future. And I mean, that company, Filmhouse Weddings, has literally provided for me through my whole California season. I never had to get a job in California. In fact, I've never had a job because of that.
That's awesome.
That's the only thing I've ever done.
Yeah.
And so I think it's different for everybody, but I think I just envision the kind of life that I want to have one day. And I would ask myself, am I the kind of person today that I want to be like in the future? Mm-hmm. If the answer was no, I had to readjust my actions and my habits.
Yeah.
And I would listen to tons of podcasts. I mean, I remember Lewis Howes, School of Greatness, mm-hmm. like the early days of his podcast, I would be listening to every single episode, just soaking it in, learning information. Just, I remember he said this one thing. He's like, my head never hits the pillow unless I learn something new that day.
Yeah.
And I took that concept for myself and I started to develop myself, right? Now to tie it to, let's say, the spiritual or like the church, right? I think there's I've noticed a lot of people in the church have this phrase that they use, like, not my season yet, or God hasn't told me to move yet, or whatever. And I think, like, there's a lot of truth to that. I think there are seasons where God says stop pause. But I think certain people, they overuse that as an excuse to not take action. Because the thing is, I believe God has given us all the resources we need to be successful in life. And success doesn't necessarily mean money. Success could mean thriving relationships. It could mean having deep connections with people, having great leaders around you. I would consider that success, 100%. Right? Because sometimes you can have all the money in the world, but you don't have any amazing people that you can trust around you, right? And so I think, like, one thing that I've realized, and I tell this to young people, like people younger than me, that, like, if you want to do something, like, you have to fail a lot in order to figure out what you want to do. And recently I sat with a very successful business guy, and he explained to me how Thomas Edison, he failed 99 times before he figured out the light bulb. Yeah. And he said he was a failure for 99 times. Everyone around was like, you're a failure. But that one time he succeeded. Guess what? He was a genius.
Yeah.
Everyone was like, dude, he's a genius. Mm-hmm. And guess what? They forgot about all the failures.
Yeah.
They don't look at him as the failure anymore. He's the genius.
Yeah.
And that's how frail society is, in the sense of how vain it is. Is one day you're a hero, and the next day you're not a hero anymore. Like, you're a villain, right?
Right.
So that's why we can't live based on off of other people, what they think about us, or being afraid of failure. Because the reality is, you need to fail a lot before you actually become very successful.
Yeah.
And I mean, for me, bro, like, I've been in my industry for 14 years, and I would say probably only in the last 3 or 4 years have I been seeing, like, some major fruit, especially this year.
Yeah.
Major breakthrough in the business. And I'm 14 years in, bro.
Yeah. Yeah, dude, that's awesome. I'm like, I agree with everything that you just said regarding the mindset, right? That a lot of people have of just waiting on God. Oh, when it's God's time, he's going to let me know, you know, and continue to wait when God has given us everything that we need. We live in the United States, for goodness sakes. Mm-hmm. Right? We have every resource available to us. But we put that on, like, as an excuse to not move forward and to stay complacent and to not want to take responsibility for our own lives.
That's it, man. We don't want to take responsibility.
Yeah. And there's so many people that would rather blame God than do what you did. Be intentional, self-reflect, you know, and go for your goals.
Yeah.
One
thing I want to add real quick. Yeah. There's this. So Stephen Furtick did a thing with Bishop T.D. Jakes. Have you seen it before?
The sit down
interview.
Yeah.
The OG one.
Yeah.
So
I don't remember too much.
Yeah. Highly recommend it. It changed my mindset too. It was a kind of a sit down interview like this. And Bishop T.D. Jakes is like a legend in the Christian world. Like, he's an incredible pastor, leader. He's like he's like a John Maxwell.
Yeah.
You know, that level. And he was bringing this brilliant example of, like, how so many times our prayers to God are like, God, I need a table. God, I need a chair. Mm. You know, and we're just like praying, God, I need a table. God, I need a chair. Like, you know, like, we need things in life, and we need this. We need that. And God's like, listen, man, I gave you a tree. Mm. Go and cut it down. Make yourself a table. Make yourself a chair. Like, that is the blessing right there.
Yes.
Like, the blessing is, I've given you the resources. You have to be the one that goes and gets it. Like, he's not going to bring it to you, right?
Yeah.
And so that, to me, was such a mind-blowing concept that, like, And I think somewhere in scripture, I think it's in Proverbs, there's this verse. No, it's in Ecclesiastes, I think. It says, "For I have already approved what you do." What if, hypothetically speaking, which is the hypothetical, what if God already approved the good things that we want to do in our hearts? What if the things in our hearts are the things on his heart and he already wants us to do it?
Yeah.
But we're not doing it because we're waiting on him. It's kind of like you're a parent and your son keeps coming to you. He's like, "Dad, can I go in the fridge?" "Sure." And then 5 minutes later, "Hey, Dad, can I go in the fridge?" He's like, "Yeah, you can go in the fridge." "Hey, Dad, can I go to the fridge?" "Yeah, the fridge is right there. You can go." It's like that's us with God. Like, "God, can I go to the fridge? It's like, the fridge is yours. Yeah. Just go access it. Go open it and take it out, you know?" So that's my mentality.
So good, man. So good. And so what was the difference that you saw post Bible college in your business, right? To after Bible college, what was the fruit of that surrender?
Yeah. So one of the cool things I got to do, actually, I got to do an international workshop 2 years in a row, where there was a group of photographers and videographers that flew out to Italy. This was actually, I'll talk about the one last year. We did Paris 2 years ago, but last year we did Lake Como and Venice. So we had a little workshop that we did. I did with a friend of mine. She's a photographer. And we taught on the wedding industry, taught how to book clients, how to build a luxury brand. But we also shared our faith. And there was like a group of 5-6 people, not super big, but it was like an intimate setting where they were able to ask questions. We were able, we were able to share like our experiences over the last decade. And then we had like opportunities for them to like create content. We had like, we hired out like wedding models, and they would shoot different things to build their portfolio, like in the most beautiful places in the world, right?
Yeah.
And one of the things we shared was how the moment I like put God first in my business and started like going through the lens of like, "Lord, what will honor you? What are things that I'm doing in my business that are not honoring you?" And the moment I changed that, everything changed for me. So that's what we would teach. That's what I would teach the students. And bro, like, I recently had a call with one of the students about like from a year ago. I'm like, "Bro, it's been a year. Like, how has your business changed from that workshop that you paid money to and you flew, you know, and stuff?" And he's like, "Bro, you know, it's crazy." He's like, "The one thing that changed my whole business is that I realized that like I wasn't putting God first, and I started putting him first, and everything changed for me. My brand changed, my inquiries changed." Like, everything changed.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, "Really?" He's like, "Yeah." I'm like, "Bro, like, that's crazy." That's the one thing he took away from all of the business stuff that we taught. That was the thing. And I heard that from other people too. Similar conversations, man. I mean, I remember one night, one of the last nights, we were sitting having dinner at this beautiful villa, private villa. And I was sitting next to this photographer girl, and she was just like weeping. And she's just like, "I'm so grateful that I could hear this information and that I can do this with God." And she was like literally crying. Like, it took her a lot to get to that workshop because she had some pretty crazy life circumstances going on at the time. And bro, like, in that moment, I realized my life mission wasn't necessarily to become the wealthiest dude, but I just want to be faithful with what I have in front of me and let people know that, like, if you add God to that equation, it's not going to make you less money. You're actually going to be maybe more successful, but the success is going to be from the fulfillment and from the relationships. And there's this verse, I'm going to butcher it, but he said, I think this is in Proverbs. He adds, actually, can I find it?
Yeah, yeah.
This is so good. I think I actually may have texted it to the group. So Proverbs 10:22, "Blessing of the Lord makes rich. He adds no sorrow with it." So when God blesses something that you do, you see a lot of successful people, like very wealthy, they have everything, private jets, but they're just so depressed and sad. Sad. Yes. Maybe not depressed, but sad.
Empty.
Empty. But here what it says is, "The blessing of the Lord makes rich," and not necessarily like money rich, but let's say wealth.
Right.
"He adds no sorrow with it." So what it's saying is, if you put God in your business, you're going to like, let's say you do make money. And I'm not saying like it's all about money. I'm saying that's a part of it, of a business. And then there's other things like relationships and connections and connecting with leaders in your industry. But the point is, there won't be any sorrow with it. So you're going to be able to still enjoy life and have peace and be with your family. Yeah. You're not sitting there worried about the zeros on your account because you know it's the Lord's anyways.
Yeah.
It's His.
Yeah.
It's not mine. So that's the difference, bro. If people can catch that, it's life-changing.
So good. Did you go to that business?
I did. Man. I was there. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. What was the guy's name? Dan something?
Something, yeah.
Yeah, man. That story, his testimony was crazy. I'd love to have him on this podcast one day. But when he said that, it hit me, man. Like, because I've experienced riches with sorrow, you know?
Yeah.
I've experienced the emptiness that comes with having your identity be in how much money you make, what car I'm driving, and all that stuff, what kind of watch I have.
Yeah.
I had my identity on all that stuff, and it was empty. Yeah. It was completely empty. And I've also been in a season where, like I am in now, right, where the road ahead is so uncertain, but I feel so much peace. Like, I know He's got me.
Yeah, you
know?
So good.
It's so crazy, bro. Yeah. Like, like, it's so like, if you don't know God, it doesn't make sense because everything in this life, in this world, tells us that security and peace comes from, you know, having your future secure, knowing that you're taken care of, and our identities are in everything else that are the wrong things. But yeah, man, that verse, he adds, what is it? He adds riches with no sorrow.
Yeah. Blessing of the Lord makes rich. And He adds no sorrow with it.
Yeah. Man, when we can actually grasp like the fatherhood of God, when we can grasp the love of God, and like I said, like I grew up in that context of not seeing God rightfully as He is. So now that I'm not God's revealing in Himself to me in this new way, or I'm unlearning those lies, right, that I believed. And actually accepting what the Word of God says about who God is, there's so much freedom, man. And like, I know that He's gonna take care of me. You know,
so good.
All the verses about, you know, if He feeds the sparrows that don't sow or reap, how much more is He gonna take care of you who were created?
What a wild thought, man!
It's crazy.
What a wild thought.
Yeah, I mean, and it takes that childlike faith to take that word and actually believe it, receive it, accept it for myself, and apply it to my day-to-day life. When fear, uncertainty, or worry come into my life, what am I holding on to? You know, but
so good, bro.
Yeah, man. It's a beautiful, beautiful journey that you've been on.
Dude, God is so good, man.
With the Lord. So what's this most recent season been like for you?
Yeah. So I've been out of the college. It's going to be a year here in the spring.
Yeah.
And it's been really interesting because in that season, it was 3 years of my schedule was not in my control at all. It was like, you know, prayer. Like we had our Tuesdays to Thursdays. It was a 9:30 to 3:30. We had events on the weekends. We had, you know, had to be at church all day. And all of that was to kind of build community and make all the students just kind of learn what it means to serve the Lord, like serve in the Lord's house. There's something special about it. And now that I'm out of it, I had to kind of restructure my brain to like my schedule again. So now I have all this time. What am I going to do with it? And bro, one thing I've been intentional about is just we're blessed at our church to have incredible business leaders that are extremely successful. So I've been intentional about reaching out to some of those guys and taking them out to coffees and lunches and dinners and asking questions and learning and just taking in as much as I can, because my main focus around is my wedding company. So Film House Weddings. And I think we've kind of become like this luxury videography company over the years with like some really incredible types of people that I never thought I would be able to work with, like executives of like major companies you would know about. And now I feel like I really want to scale this thing up and create like kind of the Gucci of wedding videography, man. Like that. Kind of like if Gucci and Ritz-Carlton had a baby, like that's kind of what I'm trying to create for the wedding videography world.
So good.
And I've been studying like for example, the Ritz-Carlton. Like, I don't know if you know, but one of the co-founders is actually a Christian. He's a believer. I didn't
know that. That's crazy.
Yeah, he was on. I can send it. He was on a podcast, and he talks about how he created the culture there and how they're so intentional with the customers and how you know, they empower their employees to like make decisions, right? Like, one of the things that they do is every single employee for the Ritz, from like the front desk clerk to the dishwasher, they all have the ability to use up to $3,000 in credit to take care of a customer without the approval of a manager.
Wow.
So if you come in, you lost your luggage and you need clothes, they'll walk you over to the gift shop and they'll get you some stuff, right? If they decide they want to take care of you, they have up to $3,000 without the approval of a manager, right? So it's those things, this kind of culture of like, it's so backwards to what corporations do. They don't trust anybody. It's always like tight, you know. Granted, I've never been in it, thank God, but I've worked with them, you know, and so I understand kind of how it works.
Yeah.
But I've kind of just been studying, man, like, what does a great brand look like? You know, like right now I'm listening to this podcast. It's like almost like a 5-hour podcast. It's about the handbag company. I'll tell you right now. Shoot. What's the Birkin bags?
Yeah, yeah.
I'll tell you right now called. It's been blowing my mind because it's showing me, it's called it's Hermes or is that how you pronounce it?
I think so.
Hermes or whatever. Yeah. And so it's called Acquired, and it's like a 4.5-hour podcast, and they talk about the history of it. It's like one of the oldest companies and how they've been able to kind of stay independent for like over like 100, probably like 200 years now.
Wow.
And they work like everyone that makes like the bag, every piece of thing that they sell is like it's not someone that's like employed by the company. Mm. It's like an artist somewhere in the world that works on it, and they like hire them out, and that's the culture that they have. It's kind of similar to my thing. It's like, yeah, I'm working with all types of videographers and I'm working with editors, and I'm kind of blessed to utilize their skill and talent. And so right now what I'm excited about in this next season is to really be intentional about building the brand and maybe even scaling it up a little bit, increasing a little bit of the events that we do, and becoming like the company that people come to, like from the events business side of things, but also from the wedding side. People know that they're going to get a movie. Like, they know that they're going to get a Capice.
Yeah.
Like a custom Hermes bag, you know, like, yeah, if I pay them, like, they're going to take care of me. So I feel like if I do that, I feel like it's going to open up a lot of doors to the things that the Lord's put in my heart, and it's going to unlock for me to be able to like purchase land and build the things, like literally build the things that I feel like the Lord is calling me to. One of the things I wanted to share is a few years ago, so I'm 31, I'm turning 32 in June. As of today is what, March 1st. Mm-hmm. But when I turned 30 a few years ago, I went to New York for 3 days. New York is like my favorite place. Yeah. So I turned 30 and I went to New York for a few days to dream with the Lord about my 30s. Mm-hmm. Like, Lord, what do you have for me? My
30s. So good. Yeah.
And I was by myself in the city, having dinners and just like enjoying my time and listening, journaling every day. And while I was there, bro, one morning I was sitting in Dumbo at this beautiful hotel called the One Hotel in Dumbo, having breakfast. Funny enough, Shawn Mendes was sitting like 3 tables away from me over there. I'm like, this is so wild. This is so funny. He's just by himself having breakfast. But anyways, I'm journaling and I start writing about my journey of like even dealing with porn and getting healthy and getting healed and being a part of these groups and submitting myself to that process. That was freaking hard, dude.
Yeah.
But digging deep, like, why was I doing this? But I was journaling and I remember I was writing like, I remember when I was searching for the next high, whatever. But once I wrote the next high, this whole brand fell into my head of like the next high society. Mm. For men that are searching for the next high in life, it could be with anything, any kind of high, but they're doing it in unhealthy ways. Mm. And I got this idea, like my avatar, my like target audience would be a dude that's like almost very successful. He's like almost rich. He's like almost has the power, right? I guess like the acronym is like Henry. So high earner, not yet rich.
Okay.
That would be kind of my target. And I've actually, since then, I started this. So I started like an Instagram account. I launched it. And right now I do like monthly Zoom calls, like invite only guys that I feel like really want to grow and learn. Yeah. And I bring on guests, people that I've met over the years. Yeah. Like last month, I was telling you earlier, one of my friends who was a Marine One pilot for the presidential helicopter for Joe Biden and for President Trump.
Right.
So he was the guy that lifted up off the White House. He was the guy, you know? And so we had him come on last month, shared his story, the stuff he went through, how God really showed up in his life. And my vision for that, bro, is this year, I feel like the Lord is just asking me to be intentional. So every month I have one call, a Zoom call, guys all around the U.S., a lot of them are friends of mine. I invite a special guest, record them all. But I think next year, after I build this community for this year, I think next year, like, maybe have some sort of in-person retreats. Eventually want to launch a podcast of my own as well. And then the dream is to have a state-of-the-art retreat center. Wow. Where men can go and get healthy for a weekend and just get holistic. And maybe even longer, maybe like 3-4 weeks.
But
they get away from the craziness. They go dream. We'll have pastors come through and pray, and we'll dig through some of the deep stuff, right?
It's so important right now, man.
State-of-the-art gym. Yeah. Work out like 10 times a day. Like, I have buddies in the military that would come out and teach, like, maybe we'll have like a shooting range and just do like dude things.
Yeah.
But for guys to disconnect from the dopamine of this, scrolling, all this stuff.
Yep.
And that's like the vision, man. The vision is to have this state-of-the-art, beautiful retreat center where men can come get healthy. And I know that if a man can get healthy, his family will get healthy. His kids will grow up healthy.
Dude.
His marriage is going to be healthy. And I'm not married yet, bro, but I've seen enough in my life of unhealthy men with power and money and what it does to them. Mm. And I just said, you know what? I'm going to be the solution to this. Lord, send that. Me. I'll go.
And there's such a need in our culture right now that's projecting toxic masculinity and an unhealthy version of masculinity. I mean, just one of the guys that I was following for a little bit, Wes Watson. I don't know if you know who that is.
Maybe I've heard.
Just this prison guy that super yoked, tatted, just driving a Bugatti, and he's saying some truthful things, right? Like, he's spinning some facts, but it's also wrapped up in this persona that in order to be masculine man, you have to look a certain way, you have to talk a certain way, you have to treat women a certain way, and your priority has to be money and this. And so many guys out there that are searching for an identity.
Yeah.
And they're searching for it. And for most guys, that identity comes from how much money you make and what you do.
Yeah.
Because as men, that's what our culture tells us, gives us our value.
Yeah.
Right. And so I love that you're doing that. That's something that's really been on my heart too. And one of the goals of this podcast too is, so I'm glad you brought that. I didn't even know that was something you were doing, or else we would have talked about it.
Yeah, earlier. We'll talk. We should talk about it.
We should definitely talk about it because, I've been on the journey of the identity journey for a long time myself.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, in church we hear about, you know, find your identity in Christ and make sure your identity is in Christ. But what does that mean? You know, like, what does that actually mean?
You asking me?
I'm asking you, bro. Like, I want to hear your perspective on it.
Find your identity in Christ. I mean, what does scripture say? I think that's his number one thing. I mean, find your identity in Christ is literally what does the word actually say about who we are? Yeah. I mean, I have some scripture here that I always have on standby when I forget who I am. Yeah. I'm chasing a little bit of the flesh.
Right.
But I think, here, I'll read, good, read a few things here. So I have this note on my phone. It's called War Scriptures, and it has this two swords.
I love
it. So I'm like, when I'm ready to go to war, I'll freaking this puppy up. So like, this is how I find my identity. There's no, like, honestly, if this is his word. He gave us his word. And it's like, there's no way around it, bro. This is it right here. This is his word. Unless he's going to speak to you through the clouds, this is him speaking. So I look at like Psalms 119, 9 through 11. How can a young man stay on the path of purity? By living according to your word. I seek you with all my heart. Do not let me stray from your commands. I have hidden your word in my heart that I might not sin against you. There's so much direction here. It's like, okay, so how can I stay pure? Okay, live according to his word. Okay, what does that mean? Well, now it's a question of what do you do with your time? What do you do every morning? What's the first thing you do? Do you look at your phone? Do you go on social media? Mm-hmm. I mean, that in itself can solve the identity crisis right there. Because are you looking for it in other people? Like, right. Oh, today I have to be like that guy. I have to be, you know, yoked, or I have to make that much money. I think when we start chasing what other people are doing, we forget who we are.
Yeah.
We forget who God had, who we are in Christ.
Right.
Because God has something for each person. And why would you want to live your life trying to become like somebody else when you have something to offer to the world, right?
Right.
So, and another one here is like Romans 8:5. Those who live according to the flesh have their mind set at what the flesh desires. Those who live in accordance with the Spirit have their mind set what the Spirit desires. That's another question. Is like, do you walk with the Spirit daily?
Yeah.
And that right there, again, will solve a lot of issues about identity, because when you get to experience the presence of God in like a way where you know like it's God, like you got goosebumps, and I just like, you're not just feeling it, you're feeling on the inside.
Right.
Everything inside of you, you're feeling this, and I'm not trying to say it's all about feelings, because it's not, but there's moments when you're in the presence and you know there's something different.
Yeah.
There's a God encounter happening. And so that's another question, is like, are you spending time with the Spirit? Like our pastor is doing a series right now on the secret place. And one thing he said, a lot of people don't have a secret place because they got a secret life.
Yeah, that one hit.
That's the scariest one, bro.
That's a scary one for sure. Yeah, bro, I one of the things that God's been showing me this season too is really how to hold my thoughts captive. I think that's one thing that we don't talk about enough. And
so good.
I haven't heard a lot about in Christian conversations is like just discipline when it comes to that. It takes a lot of discipline to be a follower of Christ. It takes a lot of discipline to walk in the Spirit.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot of discipline to rewire our minds so that way we can be transformed.
Yeah.
And in that rewire, in that renewing of our minds is, I think, when the identity shift goes from placing our identity on everything else except for God to getting our identity from Christ. Mm-hmm. And so it's slowing down enough to hold those thoughts captive. Yeah. Ask yourself, hey, why am I feeling like this right now? You know, where is this emotion coming from? Is this anxiety? Is this something that's coming from God? What thought am I thinking that's triggering this emotion that's helping me, that's making me feel this way? Yeah. And so just slowing down enough to recognize that, hey, this emotion, this is not from God. Yeah. So it must be coming from somewhere else. Let me figure out where that somewhere else is so that way I could change it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. My pastor has this cool thing he said when we were in the college. He would speak every week to the students, and he said, talking about the thought life, he said, you know, if someone drops a bunch of trash in your front yard, are you going to claim it as it's yours, or are you going to tell them to get that trash out and get off your yard, right?
Right.
Obviously, it's not your trash, so you're going to be like, get this trash off my yard, right? Mm. And a lot of times, when we get bombarded with thoughts and ideas, we accept the trash as it's our own, but it's not. It's not our trash.
Yeah.
So we got to throw it out. And we have to remember that the enemy is working like overtime to convince us that the trash is ours. Because once we believe the trash is ours, it's game over.
It's so true, man. It's so true. I've claimed that trash for so long in my life without even realizing it.
Wild, right?
Without even realizing it. I thought I just took it in as if those were so my thoughts.
Crazy, bro.
I know. And that recognition, that is like the turning point right there of understanding, like, hey, I don't have to, not every thought that comes into my mind is my thought. Understanding who we're at war with here and how the war is played, you know, and the war is played in 6 inches between our ears. Like, it's right there. And so if we're not intentional about like guarding that space,
yeah,
then it's game over. We lost before before it's even begun.
Yeah,
you know, and so, yeah, man, it's so important.
One of the things I realized too was, you know, even like let's say my journey with pornography, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, like so, the Lord actually did set me free when I got saved, 2007. I was sober for 7 years. And then because I was in the wrong environments and I was allowing certain thoughts to get back into my mind and I didn't continue disciplining myself, I fell back into it. This time it was worse. And now I had to actually lean on God to help me get the tools, mm-hmm. which meant like I was getting myself into community with other guys that were walking on the same journey. There's actually this, for those guys that are listening right now that are looking for an out, I mean, there's something called puredesire.org. They're an organization that they do like video groups with men. That's awesome. And I know guys right now in my life that are going through it and their lives are getting transformed. My life was transformed. And I've been doing that for like the last 4 or 5 years. But one of the things that I've learned over these last 4 or 5 years, even longer, is, you know, I spent a lot of my young years, let's say, practicing my way into bad habits, mm-hmm. watching porn, thinking certain things, whatever, whatever, right? How do we expect, you know, unless God sets us free, how do we expect those things to be done overnight, right?
Right.
So it's like you practice your way into something bad. Guess what? You got to practice your way out of it.
Right.
So when it comes to our thought life, and this is for, I'm saying this to myself, like every day that I wake up, I have to be at war because, you know, no matter how good of a driver you are on the road, each, like no matter who you are, how good or how bad you are, the ditch is still 3 feet away. For anyone that is on the road, right? Yeah. And so it just takes one moment of looking away and you drive off.
Yep.
And that's it. You're in the ditch and you're like, how did I get here?
Yep.
So you looked away.
Yep.
That one time you looked away.
I know. I've gotten in that ditch so many times in different areas of my life that I finally got sick of it.
Yeah.
To the point where I was like, something has to change, you know? Yeah. And that's where that, like you said, community, accountability. Yeah. It's just like, confess your sins to one another,
yeah.
right? And there's so much power in in having that. You know, so many people think that the Christian life is a solo walk, this lone wolf walk, and I can do it on my own.
Yeah.
And nowhere in the Bible does it say to do that.
That's toxic masculinity for you.
It is. It's toxic masculinity at its core.
It's that lone wolf. You're the guy, you know? You're the man.
And that's what the media really romanticizes, right? It's that man that just on his own, you know, the cowboy on the horse with the cigarette, you know what I mean?
James Bond syndrome, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of like.
It's not real life.
Yeah.
That's an empty life, but the world romanticizes everything that is unhealthy and ungodly.
Yeah. One thing I want to say, I feel like in my spirit, I have to say this to guys that are listening is like, if you are dealing with like pornography, if you are dealing with like alcoholism, whatever it is, you can't do it on your own. And that's something I tell guys all the time. It's like, bro, until you realize that, you will never get healthy or free ever. And I know dudes that brought it into marriage and it just like destroyed their wives, man.
Yeah.
Like you think you can, like I'm not married right now, but I've been around it long enough and I've heard the stories. I've been in groups with guys that are in their 60s. Yeah. They have grandkids, bro, and they're still dealing with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like for 50 years, 56 years.
Sad.
Yeah. And so one of the things I want to just encourage guys is like, you can't walk alone. You need people around you to support you in this, because it's one thing I say is like, it's not the fact that you're doing, it's not the fact that like dudes are watching it. It's there's something deeper going on inside, like in your heart from maybe like your childhood that you're not dealing with. It's like, I call it arrested development. You arrested yourself at a certain year and you got stuck. And even though your body's growing, you're becoming older and you're changing, inside you're still like a 11-year-old kid dealing with whatever, right? And so I think what this journey does with other people, like Pure Desire, for example, is it allows you to go back into like your past with the Lord and with other men that are going through it and to really reevaluate, like, wait, who am I? And like, why did I get to that point?
Yeah, a lot of people try to deal with porn or whatever it is, a substance, which is a symptom.
Yeah, it's a symptom.
Like, it's like going out to a tree, cutting off a branch and expecting that tree to die.
Yep.
But like you have to go to the root. You have to get to the root.
It's going
to
be the hardest thing that you ever do.
It is the hardest.
But it's going to be so worth it.
Yeah. So much freedom comes from that. Yeah. Man, this has been, these have all been some really awesome conversations, bro. Awesome, bro. I'm glad. I'm so thankful that you're here, that you came on, that you shared your story.
Thanks for having me, bro.
Yeah, and it's definitely, I mean, I think there's so much more to talk about, you know, so we'll definitely have to do.
We'll cut it off at 5 hours.
Exactly, bro. We keep going all day. But we'll definitely have to do like a part two to this to continue, right? Because I think there's so much more to talk about in that, for men specifically, targeting men and the struggles that men go through.
Yes.
And yeah, so, yeah, dude, thanks for coming,
bro. Thanks for having me. It's an honor, bro.